ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Okay, today we continue reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 85. Lord Krishna instructs Vasudeva. Oh, my voice. Thanks for this seven. Sri Bhagavan Vacha. Asan Mariche Satputra. Asan Mariche Satputra Unayam Pratamin Tatakare Unayam Pratanin Tare Devakam Jahasu Viksha Devakam Jahasu Viksha Sutam yabitum udyatam Sutam yabitum udyatam Sri Bhagavan Vacha Asan Mariche Satputra Unayam Pratamintare Devakam Jahasu Viksha Sutam Yabitum Udyatam Jahasu They laugh Viksha Seeing Sutam With his daughter Saraswati Yabitum To copulate Udyatam, prepared. Translation. The Supreme Lord said, during the sage of the first Manu, during the age of the first Manu, the sage Marichi had six sons by his wife Una. They were all exalted demigods. But once they laughed at Lord Brahma when they saw him preparing to have sex with his own daughter. Text 48-49. Tenasuram agan yonim aduna vajjakamana hiranyakashipo jata nitaste yogamayaya devakya udare jata rajan kamsa vihimsita satan sochatamat jan swam taime dasatanintike. Because of that improper act, they immediately entered a demoniac form of life, and thus they took birth as son of Hiranyakashipu. The goddess Yogamaya then took them away from Hiranyakashipu, and they were born again from Devaki's womb. After this, O king, Kamsa murdered them. Devaki still laments for them, thinking of them as her sons. These same sons of Marichi are now living here with you. Acharya Sridhar Swami and Vishwanath Chakravarti explained that after taking Marichi's six sons from Hiranyakashipu, Lord Krishna Yogamaya first made them pass through one more life as children of another great demon, Kala Nemi, and then she finally transferred them to the womb of Devaki. Om Magyana Timrandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Shaksumletam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Nam Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasai Padale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namne Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesa Sanyavadi Pasachade Shatarine. Be heavy stuff. So we're coming here to this part of the Bhagavatam of Krishna Leela, where Krishna is trying to please his mother, as we all know, before the appearance of Krishna, Devaki had 6 other sons that was killed by Kamsa as soon as they took birth. Of course, the 7th one was considered as Balaram, but considered as a miscarriage because he was transferred from the womb of Devaki to Rohini. And so Krishna has appeared as the 8th child of Vasudeva and Devaki. And that's one of the interesting thing about reading Bhagavatam or the Vedic scriptures. Sometimes when we read of a certain leelas, we cannot understand why. But we have to take it that there is a reason why anything happened. But now in this present society, there's so many things happening, and people are scratching their head, why? There are no answers. But there must be some answer somewhere. In recent events, you have the cyclone in Myanmar. 100,000 or so people just washed away or died in the aftermath. And China also earthquake. Tens of thousands of people were killed. And some people claim, why? This was just children. What wrong have they done? The schoolhouse just collapsed on them. There's always a reason. And even recently, one of my daughter's schoolmate, she slipped and fell off the platform in Cheltenham and got knocked by the train, killed on the spot. She was an aspiring actress. She actually appeared in a few television shows. And the brothers, interview with the brothers, why? What a loss. Such a nice kid and so on. Why? So you can also ask why these sons were killed before they were born. What have they done? So now in this part of Bhagavatam is revealed. Krishna went to the court of Bali Maharaj to retrieve these 6 sons and bring them back to Devaki. At least let Devaki take care of them and at least act as a mother for them. And he's explaining to Bali Maharaj who these 6 sons were. They were originally the sons of Marichi. Just as anything happened to anyone, we know there's a reason from previous life. Of course, the atheists, they do not believe in past life, neither do they believe in the future life. They think that this life is all and all, is everything. So therefore, they cannot come to any answers. But from Vedic understanding, we know there's a law of karma. Every action brings a reaction. Whatever happened to us, there is. That is actually the mentality of a devotee. That is the mentality of someone who is a candidate for liberation. There's a verse from Bhagavatam that was quoted by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Actually, it was one of my favorite words, but I forgot the verse. Maybe you can help me recall. It's about the verse describing the mentality of a devotee that whenever he's faced with any adverse condition, he just considers that this is due to my past karma. And he continued to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead with faith. And such a candidate, such a person is a candidate for liberation. Actually, it's a verse quoted by Lord Brahma in his prayers to Krishna. Anyone know that verse?
Is it Tate?
Tate no kampam vishasya. Tate no. How do you go? Tate no kampam vishasya shamano. Anyway. Don't try, otherwise, I get even more embarrassed. So anyway, that's the gist of the verse. That's the mentality of the Vaishnava. Whatever happened to any adverse condition, you think, this is just due to my past karma, I'm just getting what I deserve. If there's anything good in his life, he thinks, thank you, Krishna. It's all due to the mercy of Krishna. I do not really deserve it, but Krishna is so kind. So, this, and here, this is a good lesson. In fact, the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of lessons. Although Bhagavatam means the transcendental stories of glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, describing His glories, His characters, His pastimes of His different incarnations. But there is also filled with so many stories and incidences that we can learn from. You see, on one hand, the sons of Marichi, they were very exalted demigods. And when they saw Lord Brahma preparing to have sex with his own daughter, which is completely against any religious principles. Lord Brahma, after all, he was a very elevated personality, the first created being. But what happened here is they were laughing at Lord Brahma. They were criticizing him. Even though Lord Brahma may have made a mistake, it was not their position, first of all, to correct him. What to say of laughing at him? Because this is called, you have what the, what do you call this? Positive criticism? What do you call, use the word? Criticism that has a good value. Constructive criticism. But this is completely unconstructive. First of all, it's unconstructive. And second of all, it was not a position. Being juniors to go and rectify as someone who is senior and superior than them. So we find, you know, it's interesting when Dandakaranya called me last night and said if I can give the class, and I said alright, send me the words, and I read the words and I thought it was interesting, because in the last couple of days I was speaking with two devotees, and it was the same topic came up. I was speaking one devotee, he had been wanting to see me since last week, finally we got to meet, and he was asking me the same topic based on the same point about criticism, how to avoid criticism. There's sometimes I come into the temple and assist with devotees, and then criticism is going on about this person, that person. What should I do? I don't want to ruin my spiritual life. So very often the criticism of others is based on envy and pride, thinking that I'm superior, I'm better off than anyone else. And this is the nature of the contaminated mind. Prabhupada explained the nature of the swan like person, the pure devotee like the swan, and the materialist, they're like the crow. The swan, they're very expert at picking the nectar without touching the water. They just pick up the milk. But the crow, straight away, they just go for the garbage. Straight. Where's the garbage? Where's the garbage? You found crows usually in garbage dumps, dirty places. You never find a swan there. The swan is always in a clear lake. So that's the difference in mentality. The pure devotee, they always see good in others. That's a Srila Prabhupada. When he came to America, it must be so shocking. Such a cultural shock. Most of you from India, when you first came here to Melbourne, came to Australia, it must be quite a cultural shock. And Prabhupada came there. And not just any place in the world, it's New York City. And not just any place in New York City, ended up in the Bowery. It's like the lowest of the low. He was staying in a place where drunkards were just lying on the floor and the stairs, and he had to climb over them to get upstairs. This is a place I was told by a New Yorker devotee that it's a place when you have to pass through, you try to beat the traffic light so you don't have to stop. If you're unfortunate enough to be stopped by the red light, then you have to stop, and then these derelicts and drunkards will come, and then sometimes they just spit on your windshield and then mop it, and expect you to give some money to them. That's the kind of place in Bowery. So, but all the people coming to him, some were drugs. I mean, almost everyone was taking drugs. And when he has his kirtan in the morning, most of the people who come to his program in the morning were trying to come down from the high, LSD high. They had a whole night of LSD, drugs and everything. They said, well, you come to Swamiji's place with all the kirtan, it's a very good place to come down. It's a good landing. So these were the people Prabhupada was dealing with. But yet, Prabhupada was able to just pick the good in them. He didn't focus on the bad quality, but he's focusing on, yeah, there's some desire for spiritual life. There's some desire for alternative life. There's some desire for knowledge. Oh, they're attracted to kirtan. They're attracted to the chanting. So even with a little spark, Prabhupada was fanning it. Fanning the spark. But whereas someone who don't have that mentality, do not have that vision, instead of fanning the fire, you just pour a bucket of water over it. Gone. Diminished. So this is something we have to be very careful, especially criticism, because it leads to Guru Parag. It leads to Vaishnava Parag. And it also leads to all kinds of offenses towards deity worship, offenses against the Guru, offenses against other Vaishnavas, different levels. Generally, I say generally, we are able to avoid Guru Parag. We know, here's a Guru, very advanced, pure devotee of the Lord. Be very careful, we are all very humble and submissive towards the Guru. But in terms of dealing with other devotees, sometimes we may be a bit more negligent. And we start seeing faults in others, we start seeing mistakes. But actually we have to understand the mistakes that we see, the faults that we see, may be only due to our perception. It's a matter of perception. And a perception may be influenced by the most of material nature. It may also be influenced by envy or jealousy. Or it can be influenced by pride. Sometimes, for example, we may be very good at doing something, and we feel good about it. And it's alright to feel good about something, that I'm doing some good service for Krishna. But sometimes that pride becomes a bit too much. We should take pride in what we are doing. If you don't take pride in what you're doing, you will not do it well. So some pride is okay, but when it goes too much, then you start thinking, I'm so much better than this one. I'm so much better than that one. Or I know for myself, I was just telling this devotee the other day, just like before, sometimes during certain period of my spiritual life, I have good sadhana. Unfortunately, I never had very good sadhana. Sometimes may be a blessing. Sometimes when I manage to just get up and have great good sadhana, then I start to become proud and say, he didn't come for program, he didn't come for program, he didn't come for the program. And that mentality just comes up. And we start making judgment. But the Vedas point out, Vaishnavaya Kriya Mudra He Bhujaya. Sometimes it's very, very difficult to understand the activities and the mind of a devotee, especially a pure devotee or very advanced devotee. Very difficult to understand their mind, why they're doing what they're doing. So it is not our position to judge and criticize based on what we see. Sometimes we may see there's a mistake there. But as Krishna said in Bhagavad Gita, every endeavor is filled with faults. Who has no faults? Prabhupada said, you want to find fault with me, you also find faults. In fact, there was people who find fault with Prabhupada. Say, he cannot be a pure devotee because he's wearing glasses. He's not perfect. Huh? Because he's imperfect eyes. What has that got to do with spiritual perfection? But people will find fault. So if you want to find fault, there are plenty of faults to find. So we should become nectar hounds, hounding for the nectar, sniffing around. Where's the nectar? Where's the nectar? As Prabhupada also pointed out, he will find gold in the garbage dump. Don't walk away. Pick it up. It's gold. Doesn't matter where you find it. You pick it up. And sometimes Krishna instructs us in very unusual ways. Very unusual ways. I was told about one devotee. I think it was somewhere in former Yugoslavia. I don't know which of the country now. He had some difficulty in the temple. And then he decided to leave the temple. I think I mentioned it once in the class. He walked out of the temple, turned the corner. One drunkard came up to him. Hey, you got a dog collar. Where's your master? He left, but he still had his neck beat. Said, where's your master? And that woke up the devotee. Said, yeah, I have a dog collar. Where's my master? And he turned around and walked back into the temple. And one more thing, what instruction can you get from the drunkard? You know, he's gone. But Krishna can use him to instruct us. But he will think, come on, get lost, you know, you're a drunkard. Why have you got to tell me? We missed the message. You have too much pride. So, we have to think that very often, in fact, the thing about judging others is completely useless. It's a completely useless activity, a useless expending of our energy to judge others. When I read this book, although Dhammarita Maharaj was saying something about it in one of his class recently, How to Win Friends and Influence People, the classic Dale Carnegie book. Anyway, one of the points, when I read that, it was really strike me. At the end of one of the chapters, he quoted someone as saying, "Say even God do not judge someone until death, until the end of his life. Even God do not judge." And I thought, wow, what a profound statement. Even God do not do that. But we humans think that we are better than God. We're judging everyone all the time. Making judgment. Who do we think we are? You know? So after I read that, and of course a few other things, I try, it's not successful all the time, try to bite my tongue. If any time I think of, I want to criticize someone or saying something negative to someone, just try to bite my tongue before I say it. Don't succeed all the time, but at least you make the endeavor. As Prabhupada said, habits is second nature to a human being. So we can try. So as this devotee is asking me what to do, I said, you have developed the habit of eulogizing devotees. Develop the habit of praising devotees for their service. By doing that, you have less chance of criticizing. The more we praise, the less we criticize. Isn't it? So if we exercise this, develop this habit of just always trying to see the good in others and praise it. Praise them. Oh, Prabhu, that was really nice. That was a really nice service you did that. Or you did this, or that was very nice. And it was very, very difficult actually for me to do that, especially beginning, because I couldn't understand. Coming from a culture where I come, if you praise someone too much, you become too proud. Isn't it? They always tell, oh, don't do this. That's how we grow up. How often they say no and don't, then yes. Especially as parents, we try to count throughout the day. Don't do this, don't do that. Just pointing out the mistake more often than trying to look for the good and encourage you. Oh, that was a great thing you did that. Keep doing it. People respond very well, very positively, by positive feedback. They say, oh, wow, I like that response. I want to do more of this. Isn't it? If someone praises you or points out something nice that we do, we feel very encouraged. They say, I want more of that. So how to get more of that? By doing this same activity, more. Isn't it? It's natural. But if we try and then someone, boom, we feel really like that. Energy just suck out from us and we feel completely down. But that's how we grow up. The parents just, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this. Why you do this, why you do that? And then as teenagers, we rebel. So I grew up with that kind of feedback, that kind of culture. So I thought, even as devotee, no, I cannot, I take it too far off with what Sri Bhaktisiddhanta say. One who praised me is my enemy. I take it a bit too far. So I never praised devotee, always pointing out what they did wrong. So one time, and I could not understand why devotees were reacting to me the way they were reacting. What did I do wrong? I didn't do anything wrong, I was just pointing out what they did wrong. So then one devotee, one of my friend, pointed out to me, and he hit me like thunder, like a lightning strike. Boom. Wow. Is that what it is? And it just happened that I was visiting Malaysia the same year, a few months later. And I was observing, hey, wait a minute, this is the environment I grew up in. And that what make me, the environment I grew up in. So then I make an endeavor to change. So, how to get through that? So anyway, the point is criticism. One way to actually look at it is, as I said to this devotee, anything we do, we always have to look at the consequences. What does it lead to? What is the conclusion of it? Is my activity beneficial or not? If I'm criticizing someone, is it beneficial? Is it beneficial to me or is it beneficial to that person? If not, what is the use of that activity? And that's why a spiritual master is very, very expert in dealing with the disciple. He knows when to point out the faults and he knows when to encourage. But most of the time he's encouraging. Picking out some good point, encouraging and fanning it. But sometimes when it's necessary, he will just hit you. Just to rectify and to help us progress even further. So we have to ask ourselves, my criticism, what is the benefit of it? First of all, am I making a correct call on this point? Is it just my perception? I just recently there was one devotee from ashram devotee. He got together with another Mataji. They don't want to be engaged or whatever. And immediately, what comes to the mind of the devotees? They start thinking, oh, why they do this, why they do that? Are they following principles? Are they this, are they that? I thought, what is going on here? What is going on in this devotee's mind that they're thinking like that? What is wrong? Why immediately we jump to some negative conclusion? What have we been learning all this time? People do what they do. And especially when you've been around for some time, you realize that it actually humbles you a bit by staying around. Because you realize, when we first came, we think we are Superman. we are invincible. You know, we start making so much progress, we think we're invincible. And then we realize along the way there are some pitfalls here and there. There are so many pitfalls. And sometimes we slip. And by the mercy of the devotees, we manage to pick ourselves up and we keep going. And then we slip and keep going. And we realize, because of the mercy of the devotees, that I'm still around doing service. And it kind of is a very humbling experience and humbling realization that make you less in criticizing others. That you know, I'm capable of slipping too. I thought I was so invincible when I first came. Brahmachari, Sankirtan, Bodhi, Gano, boom, let's go, blitzkrieg, like a tank, you know? And then we hit the wall, boom! What's going on here? Keep going and it's not going anywhere. And then the Bodhi put us like, oh, this way. And then we go, you know? That's what happened in the beginning, we just like keep going, like, you know. And because devotee is mercy, go this way, go this way. Avoid all these pitfalls. And then it's humbling. And then we realize, I'm capable of sleeping too. So this devotee, maybe he's going through a difficult patch. We should be merciful. We should be merciful. And try to put ourselves, be empathetic. Empathize with them. What is this person going through? What can I do to help him from this level he's in now and bring him up to the next level? Yes, maybe what he's doing is wrong. He may even be wrong. But that's not the point. The point is, what can I do to help this person go up from here where he is now or where he has dropped and bring him up to the next level? And help him to pick himself up and get going. Rather than to just chop him off. Chop the person off and say, he's fallen. He's useless. He's in Maya. As if he will never be in Maya. I'm just a pure devotee. I'll never be in Maya. He's in Maya. So, and this become very useful into Vaishnava Puran. Offending. Because everyone is very dear to Krishna. As anyone who has done any devotional service is dear to Krishna. In fact, in one purport, Prabhupada said in the Bhagavad Gita, that as soon as we turn to Krishna even once and say, my dear Lord, from today on I'm yours, Krishna take care of that person, he never let him go. Never let that person go. So, throughout history, actually, there's so many instances of criticism, offenses, and doesn't matter how elevated they were, they fell down. And there was a case of these sons of one of the king who performed. He was just about to perform the 100 Ashwamedha Yajna, horse sacrifices, and Lord Indra didn't like it. Because he is known as the one who had done 100 yagyas. So he didn't want anyone else to do it. He stole the horse. Then the sons of this king were searching everywhere for the horse. And came upon the ashram of Kapila Dev. They approached him and Kapila Dev was in deep meditation. And they started offending him. Thinking that he stole the horse by pretending to be quiet. They offended him, and when Kapila Dev opened the eyes, the fire just consumed them. And Prabhupada explained that actually it was the fire of envy within them that burned them to ashes. And that led to the story of previous other future kings who tried to bring the Ganges down and deliver the forefathers, and that's how one of the reasons that led to the descent of Ganga. So they were powerful prince kshatriyas. They were destroyed by their offense. And also in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's Ramananda Puri. He was a disciple of Madhavendapuri. And Madhavendapuri, towards the end of his life here, he was always lamenting, "Oh Krishna, I did not attend the shelter of Mathura." So he was lamenting like that. And Ramanandapuri, Ramachandapuri, right? Ramachandapuri. He came and criticized his guru and instructed him. "Say, my dear guru, why are you getting so sentimental in your old age and towards the end of your life you're getting sentimental? That, you know, is a pure devotee, someone who is absorbed in Brahman, that he's beyond lamentation and hankering. Brahma Bhuta Pasanatma Nasoshati Nakangshati. There's no hankering, there's no lamentation. Why are you lamenting like that? You should be thinking of Krishna and not in this lamentation." So disturbing the mood of Madhavendapuri, chase him out. "You rascal, foolish rascal, here am I lamenting, hankering for Krishna. And here you are disturbing the meditation. Get out of here." So because of that, he fell into a more Mayavad philosophy, became Mayavadi, full on Mayavadi. And came to Jagannath Puri. So one time Jagadananda invited him for lunch. And he ate sumptuously, at the Jagannath Prasad. And then he would say, "Okay, now you eat." And he kept feeding him. And he said, no. And he said, more. And Jagannanda didn't want to offend Ramachandapuri. So he kept eating, and more than he usually ate. Then Ramachandapuri said, "I have always heard that the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are always eating too much. Now I've seen it with my own eyes." So that was his policy. He'll feed them and force them to eat so much, and then he'll criticize. "See, now I've seen it with my own eyes." So much so, and he was looking out for the faults in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he could not find any faults. And one day he came to the house of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he saw some ants there on the floor. I mean, ants you find everywhere. He said, "Aha! Now I can see the ants on the floor. This sannyasi must be eating sweetmeats." Sannyasi, it's not supposed to be eating so much sweet. And he's eating sweets. That's why the crumbles on the floor and all these ants are there. This way he criticized Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. "You're a sannyasi, you're supposed to be a renounced order of life. Why are you enjoying all this sense enjoyment?" So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually instructed Govinda to tell everyone to cut half of what he usually eat. And all the devotees were lamenting, cursing Ramachandapuri, "What is going on?" And they also fasted. And then he would come to see, why? Then he, again he came and criticized Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. "Why are you practicing this, forced renunciation? One who is practicing spiritual life, yogi, he has to be balanced. Not eat too much, not too little. Not sleep too much, and not sleep too little. Now you're practicing forced renunciation. How are you going to advance with all this forced renunciation?" So it's like the saying goes, damn if you do, damn if you don't. So that was his mentality. And so much so when he finally left, all the devotees were so relieved. Can you imagine that the devotee is feeling relief that you leave? That you're gone? Normally when a devotee leaves, we feel separation. Do you really have to go? And hugging and tears and someone, especially someone close. But here is Ramachandapuri, when he left all the devotees, he's gone. I'm relieved. So this is very, we have to be very careful in spiritual life. Because it's too much at stake. It's too much at stake. It's such a valuable Brahmanda Brahmite Kona Bhagavan Ji Guru Krishna Prasadibai Bhakti Lantabish. After traveling through so many lifetimes, so many different bodies, different universes, finally we are able to receive, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, the Bhakti Lata Bij, the seed of devotional service. The seed, he is properly cultivated, properly watered, and properly taken care of, will grow and grow and grow and grow and break through the covering of the universe, even beyond the Vaikuntha planets, and finally come to Golok Vrindavan and rest and blossom at the lotus feet of Krishna. Such a wonderful gift, such a rare gift. And even before reaching that, there's so much rasa one can taste. Devotional service is not all about just austerities. It's not just all about renunciation, not just all about heavy. There's so much rasa. You read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the devotee was having such good time. There's austerities there, but they were all having a good time. What is Chaitanya Prabhu's program? Feasting. You have kirtan. That's kirtan, ecstatic kirtan, and then feasting. And then to the devotees, and now you go back and take rest. And come back evening for more kirtan and more prasadam. That's Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's organ, kirtan and feasting. A nice association. Where do you get such nice association? Someone was telling me before, some months ago. Is that Dale? You're telling before how it took him a quite a long time to get used to the fact that devotees are not here to exploit you and stab your back, because you are so used to it in the kami world. Every time you try to do something good, someone is stabbing you and try to pull you down. So when he came and someone was doing good and he could not understand, he was very apprehensive. Oh, he's trying to pull me down, or he's trying to, isn't it? You're telling? So actually, it's in association with devotee, you can actually feel safe. This devotee I'm associating with, he's looking out for me. Isn't that a nice feeling? He's looking out for me. He's looking out to my interest. He's not out to get me. What can you get out of any material motivation anyway? Because what you can gain is far superior than any material gain you can get. For a devotee who has tasted bhakti rasa, what can you offer him? What ulterior motivation can he get out of you? Nothing. So it is a very, very safe, very secure feeling to be in association with devotees. And we don't want to lose that. Don't want to lose that just because of some weaknesses of the mind that we start criticizing. Because criticism leads to offenses, and offenses leads to more criticism. Our mentality become, our conscience become contaminated, our mind become contaminated, and we just start looking for faults, become fault-finding, and more fault-finding, and more fault-finding, and we just go down. So it's very important that we try to practice the habit of appreciation. Appreciating devotee. Make it a habit to at least go to 5 devotees a day and tell them, Prabhu, sincerely, before you walk up to them, it should not just be like become like another routine. Oh, Prabhu, you did very nice. Oh, I did my 5 today. You know, like, oh, 16 on dampum. You know? But before you walk up to them, get it, at least in the early stage until we have developed it. Meditate in our heart, bring it up from heart, yes, okay. And go, and really, as sincere as we can from our heart, Prabhu, I really appreciate what you did just now. Point out exactly what it is. And make a habit. Imagine the energy it will create in the community. Can you imagine? Everyone doing that, just 5 persons a day, the kind of energy it will create. everyone will feel so encouraged, and everyone will feel so enthused. The one who is giving the appreciation and the one who is receiving the appreciation. There will be so much abundance of good energy everywhere. That will just, Krishna consciousness will just blow them by anything. But when you come to a place, all is criticizing, you know, as soon as you walk in the room, you know, got the latest scoop, the latest news, you know, become like an ISKCON reporter. No, the latest one, no, this one is Maya, that one is Maya, rah, 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 rah. It's so depressing. You don't feel like wanting to come. But if it's this encouraging atmosphere, everyone feel like, oh, I want to get there. I'm a little bit down, I want to go there, because I know when I get there, I get charged into the energy, I'll feel really, you know, strong and powerful. So this is something we should try to avoid. That mentality of criticism. Give it up. Bite our tongue before you even open our mouth to criticize. And the best way to do it, just show our appreciation, express it. Don't worry that person get proud. Just express it. And you'll find such positive effect will be there. You'll feel very good about it, and the other person feel very good about it. So this is very powerful. And then we don't have to make offenses and then have the true down to demonic form of life. Tell me how, when I have read this, I thought, wow, this is heavy stuff. No, just by laughing at Lord Brahma. Even though the very elevated demigods, they have to go through to demonic forms. Three life. They take birth. First, they have to take birth as sons of Hiranyakashipu. Then they have to take birth as sons of Kalanemi. And then they have to take birth, they were getting killed by Kamsa at birth. Heavy reactions. So, thank you very much. Are there any comments or questions? No, I came back. Tatte nukampam susamikshamano bunjana ivatma kritam vipakam ritva bhavavi vidadan namaste jivete yo mukti pade sadaiva. That is the mentality of a Vaishnava. That whatever bad happened to him, he think this is due to my past karma. If it's good, he praise Krishna. Never loses faith. Whatever happens, just keep going in this devotional service with great faith and determination. Then he's a candidate for liberation. Any questions? Mahamaha Prabhu? Yes, sorry. Yeah. Can you explain that? Catching a fish without getting wet. It's like dilly-dallying with the material energy. Sometimes we think, if I just a little bit of Maya, and I can get away with it. If we dilly-dally with Maya, you get wet. That's what it means. Does that explain? It's a very simple explanation. Prabhupada used the example is that to impress upon us the importance to be very strict in our devotional life, in our devotional practice. That we cannot, if we deviate a little bit, we'll just get influenced by the most of material energy. That's why, again, it comes to the same point that we have to be very honest with ourselves. We know that in the beginning of spiritual life, very often devotees are just very renounced. They just kind of close up mentality. Only Krishna, Krishna, everything else kind of So it is okay to be like that in the beginning. It's understandable because they are trying to just protect their spiritual life. Not, oh, they're so scared of Maya. Yes. But as we progress, we have to see how. Sometimes we think, oh, I'm preaching to someone. But sometimes we may just try to get some sense gratification out of it, that preaching. For the man preaching to some lady, maybe there's some sense gratification there. So we have to be honest. Is my motivation pure? If not, you get a hooking, you get wet. That wetness means influenced by the material modes of nature. I know there was one devotee. He was the temple president in Copenhagen, just before me. He was doing a lot of radio preaching. In Scandinavia, we do a lot of radio preaching. We have 40, 50 hours a week, 60 hours a week. Do a lot of programs. So he was doing a lot of programs, and somehow there was a Mataji who was doing big collection. His wife was doing very big collection. So he opened a preaching center right on the pedestrian street, right in the center of the city. Very expensive. And did renovation and so on. So he was doing 60 hours of radio show a week. There's some repeats. And then renovation and preaching center and doing all kind of preaching. But he was not associating much with devotees because he was always busy in his radio room. And he don't have much sadhana and he don't chant his round properly. His round used to be Hare Krishna, 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 Ram, 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 Krishna, Ram, 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 Krishna, Ram, 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 Ram. That was his rounds. So he has a good motivation to preach, but he forgot the main principle, Vedic principle: save yourself first. Right? He preached and he was preaching to all these New Age groups, Buddhists, New Age, Mayavadis, and after a short while he became one of them. He became so contaminated in his mind by this association, he became one of them. And they started letting them speak on the radio without any final comments to it, with a Vaishnava conclusion. So he was brought to our notice, and we approached him, and he was not willing to change. And he started to even criticize Prabhupada. They probably don't know how to preach in this modern world. No. So we said, okay, that is enough. Stop right there. That is enough. So either you change, or we're going to suspend you. We had to take the action because it was during the Mayapur festival and GBC was in India. So we had to take action and had to stop all this Mayavadi preaching going on in the radio. So you see, that's again catching a fish and getting wet. His intention was to preach, it was good intention, but because spiritually he's weak, as he was going down to pick them up, he got pulled down. Any other questions? Yes, ma'am.
You said regarding criticizing people.
Regarding?
Criticizing people. You said not to criticize, even though if you find some faults in some person, then where is the opportunity to correct the person?
Suppose we have to see who we are in relationship. Then again, this Vaishnava etiquette has to be in place. Who we are. Is this someone's junior to us? Or you see someone, my friend. There's all this different approach. And if it's someone senior, it's not my position to go and correct someone senior. Because who knows what is the depth of his thinking, why he's doing what he's doing. It's just like in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada, so he will see Lord Nityananda going into a liquor shop. Don't start to think that he's going there for a drink. He went there to preach. See? But someone may think, why is Lord Nityananda going to a liquor shop? And then you start questioning and having doubts. No? So it's not our position to start try to judge someone, especially someone who is very advanced or more advanced than us. We don't know the reason. I gave this example once when I was helping one devotee. He was a Prabhupada disciple in a preaching center in Stockholm. And he had cooking classes, so I was helping him, and he told me to do the offering. So I do the offering, I sit up, you know. That's how you do offering. You sit on the mat, and he told me, Dandavat, do a full Dandavat. I said, we don't do that on the altar. And he was insisting that I do it, and I thought, what is he trying to do? He's trying to pull a trip on me or something, you know, power trip. Just because he's older or senior devotee, then he's just trying to pull a power trip to me. I was quite resistant to it. Although I did it, but I was not happy doing it. Because I know how to do offering. I've done offering on the altar. You sit up. So I was making a judgment call on what he was instructing me to do. And he didn't want to argue with me in front of the others. He just insisted I do it. Now later on he explained to me. He said, I want to impress upon all these guests that it's not some frivolous activity when we offer food to the picture, to Krishna. It should be done with respect. So I ask you to offer food and the vat, just to impress upon them that is the importance and the seriousness of it. When I heard that, I was so embarrassed. I felt so embarrassed. And that also one of the lessons I learned too. I started on that path, never try to make a judgment call on someone who is senior to me. We don't know what they're thinking, the depth of their thinking. So if it's someone senior, you go to someone you think is a mistake. You ask someone senior, they can deal with it. It's not us going to deal with it. And even if it's a junior, even if you see a mistake, first of all, don't tell everything at one shot. It's too much for someone to take. You point out all the mistakes. If you have to point out, maybe point out one at a time. When he's able to digest that, then you can bring up another one. Otherwise you think, oh, this is too much, you know, despite all my effort, I'm still making mistakes. I can't do it. I give up. And also you have to see the relationship. What kind of relationship you have that person? Will that person be able to accept if I'm going to instruct him? And if he's not going to be able to accept it, what is the point? Just to point out the mistake for the sake of pointing out the mistake, what is the point? What is the use of it? So that puts responsibility on both sides. The responsibility to do it in the proper way, and also responsibility on someone who is a younger devotee to be humble and submissive to receive instruction. Because if you are not humble and submissive, those who are more senior and advanced than you will not give you instruction, knowing that you will not accept it in the right way. And then we go about in a cover up thinking that I'm doing fine. Then nobody telling me that I'm doing wrong, so I'm doing fine. I'm doing great. Not realizing that because nobody is telling us because we don't want to hear from anyone. You know what I'm saying? So it depends on the relationship. But the principle of it is that if you want to instruct someone, correct someone, as Devamrita Maharaj taught me, I never forget the instruction he gave me. It's based on compassion. Compassion to help that person. And you have to know what you're doing. It's based on these two principles. You have to know what you're doing, and it's based on compassion to help that person. Anyone?